Watch This Is Saturday with Clare Byrne. You're very welcome to the programme, and we'd like to hear from you as well today. Here's how you can get in touch. The text number 51551, the email address saturday@rte.ie, and on Twitter our handle is @SaturdayRTE. Joining us today, we have the Minister of State at the Department of Finance, Simon Harris. Pádraig McLoughlin, Sinn Féin TD for Donegal North East, joins us from a studio in Derry. Here in Dublin, we have Dr Owen O'Malley, lecturer in politics at DCU, and Micheál Lehane from RTE's political staff. And we'll start with our brand new minister. You're very welcome in your new role. Congratulations, Simon.
Thank you very much, Claire, and thank you for having me.
It was a big surprise, I think, for people that you got the job, because you are the youngest TD in the Dáil and so on. And it was the headline, really, from the reshuffle. Were you as surprised as everybody else?
Or? I was. Obviously, you read media speculation, and there was such a long run-up, I suppose, to this reshuffle, which is probably unprecedented, that there's always a lot of speculation and names mentioned. And I had seen my name mentioned, but I'd seen many people's names mentioned. And
was it something that you would have been aiming?
Certainly, when I got the call, I was certainly very surprised.
Were you aiming for that for that role? If you had an inkling, say, that maybe a junior position was on offer, would that have been the one that you would have really wanted?
It's certainly a role that I think you can really get your teeth stuck into. I hadn't given it too much consideration. I wasn't being presumptuous. I was waiting to see what the Taoiseach decided to do. But I think it's a really exciting role, because I think an awful lot of the debates and the discussions from now right to the next general election is going to centre on the economy. We've obviously seen significant economic progress in terms of job creation numbers, in terms of economic growth, but we have a way to go. And I really look forward to playing my part in trying to contribute to those discussions, and in trying to, I suppose, relay the many views that I heard of people throughout my European election campaign from Dingle to Bray in terms of the economy and the challenges that they're facing in their lives, and also trying to help communicate government decisions to the people, explaining why we're doing certain things that we have to do to try and get this economy back on track.
That's a big part of this role, because as we know, Michael Noonan doesn't really speak to the media that much. So it'll be your job. And Noel Whelan, the Irish Times, says that you're the Minister for Morning Ireland now, that's going to be a part of your job coming out to bat. But there was speculation around the time that you were running for Ireland South in the European elections, that as a consolation prize for running in an election that you probably couldn't win, that you would get a junior ministerial role.
Yeah, I read that as well, and it's nonsense, to be quite honest. And I think and I hope that those who saw my European election campaign certainly know that I wasn't running not to win. I put in every effort that I possibly could, and I probably outperformed expectations in the end.
So was this your reward then?
So there was certainly none of that. No, I think, again, and I hope, the European election perhaps gave me an opportunity to display some of the skill set that I want to try to bring to this job. But certainly, no, I don't believe it was a consolation prize at all. I think the Taoiseach, well, I don't know why the Taoiseach makes the decisions he makes, it's his prerogative. But I obviously don't want to second guess him, but I'm honoured to have the role. I think it's a meaty role. In addition to obviously the finance part, there's things in relation to public procurement. We spend €23 million a day on buying goods and services in this state. That's about €8.5 billion a year. There's the OPW, the whole issue of flooding, and we saw a lot of that in Cork this year. How are we going to put a flood prevention plan in place? How are we going to do more than just put out the sandbags when a problem occurs? How are we going to plan for the future? And there's the whole issue of the IFSC. How do we attract in more financial services?
Yeah, it's a huge
job.
It's a big
role.
It's a big job. I mean, finance, Office of Public Works, Public Procurement and International Banking, as you say. So the remit is very big. Did the Taoiseach say anything to you when he was handing you the job, when he was telling you that you had the job? Did he say, look, I know you're the youngest person in the Dáil, this is a big role?
Yeah,
any of that stuff?
He did say words to that effect. He said, look, this is a great opportunity for you. He said, it is a big role. You know, he said, get stuck in, get on with it. And he told me that he knew he would. And I assured him that I'd certainly do my very best.
Did he say why he gave the job to you?
No, he didn't. He didn't. No, he didn't, actually.
OK, well, look, maybe the others on the panel will tell us why he gave the job to you. Micheál Lehane, some of the decisions were interesting, to say the least, when it came to the reshuffles, particularly the junior ministerial reshuffles. What do you think was the thinking behind all of this?
Yeah, well, two points that quickly emerged were the fact that you had a Gaelic minister who wasn't fluent in the Irish language, and he didn't pick a woman from Fine Gael in the reshuffle, both of which were controversial, but nonetheless. So there was obviously other things involved in the thinking, because the Taoiseach would have known that on both of those fronts he would have faced criticism and that would have followed. So I suppose you are looking at putting a spread of people across the country, and you're looking at putting fresh faces. The people that came by and large were relatively fresh, wouldn't have a huge national profile. So that all adds to the fight that will take place in the next election, that this government isn't stale, that they will go out and contest it and take on the two big challengers, which, judging by the local elections, clearly are Sinn Féin and that block of independents and smaller parties who are coming down the tracks very quickly.
So if the strategy was to take on those issues as you've outlined, does it make sense, given what we've seen from those appointments, the geographical spread of them and so on?
Well, some of them do. I suppose you are going to see there was always going to be an issue around Meath and Wicklow, where Simon's from. Those great big commuter belt areas were underrepresented at ministerial level. They are areas where Sinn Féin are making big gains as well. We see Heather Tobin in Meath West. Now you've Damien English in there. Fine Gael didn't do particularly well in the local elections in Navan. So an alarm bell has obviously gone off somewhere. Damien English too, competent, capable, and had been in the Dáil for a long time, so was probably in line for promotion maybe anyway. But there's two ways of looking at that. You look to Waterford, where Paddy Coffey got promoted. David Cunlan is someone who's been around a while, has a big enough profile as a senator, and Sinn Féin would be hoping to make gains there the next time. Donegal, Denny McGinley being replaced by Joe McHugh, the obvious controversy about the language, but I think that is more to do with the fact of freshening it up, as it were.
On the Joe McHugh issue, and so much has been said this week about his proficiency in the Irish language. There's an article in his defence in the Irish Times I see today that says that he has been to Irish college quite a few times, and the person who runs that college is quoted as saying that Joe grew up surrounded by Irish and speaking Irish, and actually his ability with the language isn't too bad at all.
Yeah, hard to know. I watched him take his first ministerial questions with Heather Humphreys on Thursday morning. It was early days in his ministerial reign. Well, he was using words more than sentences, which is where many of us would be at if we were plunged into that challenge. But Joe McHugh replacing Denny McGinley, we are seeing the strength of Sinn Féin and Donegal, and have done so for a while with Pádraic McLachlan and Pierce Doherty. It's a single constituency the next time, so you did need a minister there. I suppose the alternative argument was that Éan O'Riordan, who is linked to that department of arts, culture and the Gaeltacht, could possibly have got the role, but then you would have a Gaeltacht minister in Dublin rather than someone who's living in a Gaeltacht area. So you can see the thinking there. Mm-hmm. From the Labour point of view, in the reshuffle, I think, yes, Sinn Féin is obviously a threat to Labour. That's clear. But they picked their three juniors, new juniors, fresh faces this time, clearly in five-seaters. Therefore, they will have to do less, you would think, in a five-seater to win the seat. Therefore, if you've three junior ministers in the two Dublin Bay constituencies and Carlow Kilkenny, that probably, if you were setting out your people to try and hold on, makes sense from their point of view. Okay. Then again, you have to say that those people, Éan O'Riordan, a high profile backbencher, has been good enough, quite good on committees as well, on many social issues. Kevin Humphreys did well on the finance committee, and feeling less of a profile, but she is now in the Department of Agriculture, that role that Labour wanted, that something that Willie Penrose has advocated for a long time, that Labour need to go after a certain rural vote, and they probably will need every vote they can get the next time. That is certainly what that move is all about.
Okay, Simon, did you want to say something about Joe McHugh's appointment?
Well, I think Joe McHugh is an extremely diligent TD, and I think he reflects where a lot of people are in this country with the Irish language, that we all want to be more proficient, we all go through school, we all learn it up to the Leaving Cert, or at least most of us do, and then you have a situation where most people don't get opportunities to actually speak it. So I think Joe's appointment is actually going to be exciting in that regard.
Those who are supporters, though, and who are very involved in the Irish language don't seem to agree. They seem to be quite upset about his appointment.
I have no doubt once they get to know Joe and interact with Joe, I think they'll be very impressed with his ability.
Sorry, Simon. It's interesting that the Taoiseach has form in this area, with Michael Ring and Frank Feehan in opposition taking on the role. So is he clearly thinking politically and just moving people around the board that will stand the best chance of re-election the next time? Or is there a vision there where he thinks, I'll put people into the job, the teacher in him, and watch them grow and learn in the language? Michael Ring and Frank Feehan didn't develop into fluent speakers, but certainly the Taoiseach and leaders' questions during the week making it clear that there is a lot of expected of Joe McHugh when he returns from the holidays, not alone to just understand but be able to contribute.
And the poor man has gone off to summer school for his summer break to learn Irish. Owen, we're making an assumption here that if you appoint a junior minister in a certain area, that person is almost guaranteed to be re-elected by virtue of the fact that they are a junior minister. Does that hold true, do you think?
Well, it used to. So you used to have ministers in a constituency that drive their mark in and then throw goodies out the window, and you could get your schools fixed up, GA pitches dealt with.
It was bonanza time, wasn't it? If you got a minister in your constituency.
Ministers of sport, ministers for education, ministers for sport particularly, they were able to, and ministers for finance were able to deliver a lot of goodies in those areas. It's not the case really anymore. There isn't the level of discretion to give out funds. And I think even when ministers try to do that, they actually get into trouble. So Minister Riley hardly did well out of having tried to deliver two primary healthcare centres to his constituency. So it can backfire in that way. And the other issue was it gave you a profile and an association, that a media profile that would play well with the electorate. That's probably not true either anymore, in that it now associates you with an unpopular government. So in the last election, had those ministers, a lot of ministers resigned and didn't stand again, but had they stood again, they probably would have got annihilated, and being a minister didn't help you.
Help them. I thought it was really keenly illustrated when John O'Donoghue was giving his concession speech at the last election, and he was standing there saying, "It's ironic that I'm making this speech in a hall I built." Whereas at one time that was considered a fantastic thing to be able to do. Now it's a little bit unclean, isn't it?
Yeah, it looks pretty grubby. And so I don't think ministers will be trying to kind of prioritise their own constituency, or at least if they do, they won't be advertising it nationally.
But the Taoiseach wouldn't have done this if he didn't think there was some benefit to it.
I mean, there's a lot of talk about geography, and it's easy to rationalise geography by saying, oh, somebody else is there, and so therefore they were thinking. But I mean, you could say that about nearly any appointment. You could probably rationalise, give it some sort of geographic rationale for it. I think what you're really seeing is just a generational shift, that the two leaders, party leaders, the Taoiseach and the Taoiseach, just knew that there were a lot of stale old men there, and they had sort of had to go. And you had, particularly in the Labour Party, there were very few young people representing the party. Most of those old ministers weren't going to be standing again, and probably they shouldn't have been standing again. And so you had to have this generational shift and give a chance for a new generation in Labour and Fine Gael to sort of, to have an opportunity to govern and kind of bring fresh ideas. I think that is probably the logic behind it.
And what happened to the women, Simon? Fine Gael?
Taoiseach had a very difficult decision to make, and I suppose the Taoiseach in the run-up to the reshuffle said, Claire, on a number of occasions that, you know, these weren't easy decisions that he had to make. I think it is important to note, and I'd reference Liz O'Donnell has a very interesting article in today's Irish Independent in this regard. We now have a situation where we have the highest number of female cabinet ministers in the history of the state. They're directly results of decisions made by the Taoiseach and the Taoiseach. But there are many, many able men and women that the Taoiseach had to choose from. I think the Taoiseach had a lot of things to take into consideration. But look at the record of this government, both in terms of the number of cabinet ministers that are female, but also more radically even, the fact that we have introduced quotas for the next general election where 30% of candidates will have to be men, 30% of candidates will have to be women.
What does it say if you do a reshuffle and you don't appoint one woman, that even though, you know, we'll have gender quotas.
To be fair to Simon, it was obviously a problem with media management, because you took a situation where you were having the largest proportion of women TDs in cabinet, and then turned it into a story where women women were complaining about not being promoted. I know some prime ministers in the UK have described reshuffles as kind of a Rubik's cube, and it's not like Enda Kenny and Joan Burton had all this decided in advance. You move somebody somewhere, somebody refuses to go somewhere else, and so things don't all happen with clean sheets. And then perhaps after 2 or 3 days of this, you get tired, and none of the advisors kind of spotted that. Geez, we've no women here now, and so we better
do something.
Do you think
that could have been the case?
Well, I think if you look at the decision that the Taoiseach made in relation to the cabinet reshuffle, where Minister Heather Humphreys, an extremely able, competent individual, came straight from the backbenches to the highest table in politics. If you look at when the Taoiseach had a vacancy in the Department of Justice, if you look at the fact that he put in Minister Francis Fitzgerald, if you look at some of the appointments that this government has made in the justice area in relation to the Chief Justice, the Director of Public Prosecutions, the Acting Garda Commissioner, all held by females. So I think you've got to look at the government's record in the whole on this issue. And gender quotas are now nearly kind of being taken for granted by people. Asher, you did that. This is a really radical reform, and we're only going to begin to see the impact of this in the next general election, where if parties don't have 30% of each gender on the ticket, they will actually have their finances, their state supports actually docked. Mm-hmm. So, I mean, that's a radical change that this government brought in. It has to be acknowledged.
OK, Micheál, do you think it was an oversight?
I think they knew what was happening, but that they would be able to justify it on the basis of the cabinet lineup. And that was the risk, the calculation overall. That was made overall. So clearly, probably the level of the criticism that they faced from some of the women TDs may have been a little stronger than the Taoiseach might have anticipated. But they can point to the gender quotas, and the holidays are coming. So maybe it just might die down a bit. But there are unhappy people, but there are a huge number of unhappy people across the parties, as you would expect after a reshuffle, and as you would expect after a government with such a large majority. And many TDs who came in were quite young. So there was a joke going around Leinster House that there were tables of the rejected, and there were tables, many more tables, of the dejected people who were there. And I think there are some TDs who wonder, because they also look at the fact that they will be 158 seats the next time compared to 166 the last time. So many people who got elected on the government side may not make it back. And there is a thought among some, but maybe it is just in the aftermath of a reshuffle, of maybe will they contest at all, or will they stand given where things are at? But mm-hmm.
Part of the problem with reshuffles is that they are sort of more powerful in their anticipation, so people kind of try and keep their bibs clean beforehand, and afterwards now you have no incentive to do so.
Right,
so you
so
might see
a bit
more
of,
activity.
Storm clouds, maybe.
And also the fact that there were so many new faces elected the last time, the dynamic as we went into that reshuffle, for many colleagues will tell you privately, the way people positioned themselves, the way some people lobbied, the way others didn't. Many TDs found that hard to deal with. It was their first time going through that particular ordeal. So for all of those reasons, I think there are many sore people, sore with the Taoiseach, sore with many colleagues as well, and how they played the game and how some were successful and some weren't. But maybe that is just all part of it. Mm. But for some of them, it was their first time going through it.
It's interesting to see how all of that plays out in the coming months. Pádraig McLoughlin, we haven't forgotten about you. Sinn Féin TD for Donegal North East, of course, is with us as well in the studio in Derry. We were talking, Pádraig, a little earlier about how you could look at this reshuffle and surmise that what the Taoiseach was thinking was that something needed to be done about the rise of Sinn Féin. So now Sinn Féin need to start thinking that the beast is awake. You've managed to poke Fine Gael with a big stick, and it is awake and watching you.
I think what the government need to do is, we see the statement of priorities, which is really a repackaging of, you know, previously made promises that they haven't delivered upon. What the government need to focus on and be aware of is out there, you know, if, you know, the people are not seeing the benefits of the, you know, so-called economic turnaround that the government trumpet repeatedly.
Can I just ask you though on the specifics of this reshuffle? I mean, have you sat down, has Sinn Féin sat down and looked at this on the map and gone, right, they're after us here with these junior ministerial appointments in particular?
To be quite honest with you, I mean, being given a ministerial portfolio could be a curse as much as a blessing in this current government. And indeed, some of them have acknowledged that to me privately, because they need to deal with the issues that led to the kicking that they got in the local and European elections. And Fine Gael lost a large number of local council seats. So it wasn't just Labour that got that kicking in the local and European elections. The people had their first chance since 2011 to have their say. And it's clear that they're furious about the broken promises, about the austerity, about the failure to put in place a response that's commensurate to the scale of the economic crisis. And that's what the government need to focus on. I mean, you know, governments will always have opposition. They'll always have a threat. What they need to focus on is their own game right now.
Are you going to help Joe McHugh out with his Irish?
Well, you know, I have a good relationship with Joe McHugh, who's my constituency colleague, but I think he was dealt a very poor hand here. The fact is the people in the Gaeltacht regions have been very angry about this government's policies, and Commissioner Changa, the previous and Commissioner Changa, resigned because of those policies and the failure to deliver. So imagine a situation where you have Gaeltacht community representatives going to meet the minister and having to speak English. So it's very unfair to Joe McHugh, actually. If they were going to give him a promotion, they should have given him one that fitted him better.
Mm-hmm. How's your Irish, by the way? Because you, I know you were born in the UK, weren't you? So Do you have a
I don't have fluent Irish myself. And in fairness, you know, I appreciate the argument made. I mean, everybody agrees with that. I'd say most of your listeners this morning, you know, are regretful at the level of Irish that they have. You know, it's one of the great failures of our state. But in terms of being a minister for the Gaeltacht, to interact with the Gaeltacht, I think it's essential that you'd have fluent Irish.
And what's your view on the lack of women promoted on the Fine Gael side? Do you think it's a major issue?
Well, I think it was interesting that there was nine new junior ministerial positions handed out by the Taoiseach, and none of them was a woman. It was a bit puzzling, because it is welcome that we now have the highest number of female ministers in cabinet. But again, it all goes back to people listening today, because what they want to know is, will we have policies that will impact on my life and deal? If you're a small business person, if you're a small farmer, if you're somebody who's out of work, you know, that's the key issue, really, rather than the personalities or the gender makeup.
The gender.
Right now.
Can I ask you about something that's in the Irish Times today? Stephen Collins, the political editor, has an opinion piece about what he calls a stunt that was pulled by Sinn Féin in the Dáil when they asked, when your party asked all other party TDs to stand in solidarity with the people of Palestine and then held up makeshift flags. Do you agree that that was a stunt, and perhaps that it was disrespectful?
No, parliamentarians all over the world have been, including in the European Parliament, have been expressing solidarity with the Palestinian people.
Expressing solidarity is one thing, but getting the government to stand up in the way that you did, goading them into it in the way that you did, is perhaps another.
Now, what we asked for was the Dáil to be reconvened on Friday to have a debate. I mean, there is a historical solidarity and closeness between the Irish people and the Palestinian people. People in Ireland are outraged about the latest onslaught. 80 children are dead. 80% of those killed by Israel are civilians. And we need our government to do more about that, to be more bulgy, with the Israeli state. And we need that internationally. They've got away with this repeatedly. So what we wanted to do was have a debate on Friday. Unfortunately, the government didn't agree to that. But we're pleased that there was a minute's silence, and that message did go back to the beleaguered people in Gaza.
Simon, can I ask you about that? I'm not sure if you were in the chamber at the time, but was anything said about it afterwards, about Sinn Féin insisting that everybody stand in the way that they did, or what did you think of it?
I wasn't in the chamber at the time, unfortunately, Claire, but I think it was a stunt. I think Stephen Collins's piece sums it up pretty well. Nobody has a monopoly in terms of concern for what's happening in both Palestine and Israel, and we have a situation where I'm sure all Irish people who see the scenes on their television screens are finding them very distressing, do want a resolution. But standing up in the Dáil and, you know, raising photocopied bits of Palestinian flags, I don't think is really going to achieve anything, but that's my view on it.
Mm-hmm. And should it not have been the case that we should have had the debate that Sinn Féin perhaps requested, and that would have been the way forward to deal with it, as opposed to giving them the leeway to do what they did, which is what Stephen Collins suggested, that there was a gap left there for Sinn Féin to do this?
There is a process whereby people can seek debates in the Dáil through the whips meetings that happen each week. But as Pádraic will know, and as Sinn Féin will know, coming up to the end of the Dáil term is a very busy period. And in fairness to Sinn Féin and Pádraic, his own party cooperated with the government in terms of trying to get some vital legislation passed in terms of setting up a new Court of Appeal. It was an extremely busy legislative week. The Dáil is sitting much longer than it has in the past. So I'm sure there will be ample opportunity to continue to interact with the Minister for Foreign Affairs and with government on this issue, and you can be certainly assured that the Minister for Foreign Affairs will continue to be monitoring this, working with his European counterparts as well. So absolutely, there's always, you know, debates are important, but the week that was in it, there was an awful lot of business to get done in the Dáil.
Okay, Pádraic, standing up was not the way to do it. It was a stunt.
Well, all I can say is there's parliamentarians all over the world in their own parliaments, in a dignified way, holding up the Palestinian flags in solidarity with the Palestinian people. I make no apology. And I have to say this, though. you know, in fairness, historically, we have a Friends of Palestine in the Oireachtas group of TDs and senators. There's dozens in it of all political parties and independents. So the solidarity with the people of Gaza is across the Irish people, not just Sinn Féin, of course. So, you know, what we need to do is work together here in Ireland to challenge the Israeli state and to ensure that after this current phase of conflict, that we once and for all deal with the issues in terms of ending the settlements in the West Bank and ensuring that we have a lasting settlement. Everybody in Israel and Palestine deserves to live in peace and security. That's what we need to get to.
Okay, we'll leave that one there. But just to wrap up on the politics, Eoin O'Malley, to come back to what we were talking about a little bit earlier, if you look at what this reshuffle has done, and we're heading into now sort of a pre-election period, if you like, after the summer, certainly, will the next election be the hardest one to predict, do you think?
The election itself probably won't be that hard to predict. Well, it's obviously difficult to predict anything 18 months out. Anything can change. But you'd imagine that the opinion polls aren't a million miles away from where you're looking at Fine Gael being the largest party, but not by a long way. Mm-hmm. Then it would seem to be kind of Sinn Féin and Fianna Fáil competing for second place, and Labour in a distant third. And then there'll probably be a large group of independents, some of whom are like-minded. So that'll leave a problem for coalition formation, and it'll be difficult to see that there are natural coalitions. It's hard to see the current government being re-elected, it having the numbers, and it's then therefore difficult to see what other alternative one would be. Fianna Gael and Fianna Fáil would, if you were coming from Mars, would seem like the logical one, but we're not from Mars, we're from Ireland, and we know that
we don't have logics here.
That's not going to be an easy thing to achieve. So we might then start ourselves into a phase like a bit like 81 or 82, where it's difficult to get a stable government for a little while.
Mm-hmm. Stability might be a thing of the past, Simon.
I think there's still a period of time to go here, probably about 21, 22 months left in the lifetime of this government. I think it's almost impossible to predict what will happen in that time. However, I think
it's getting longer every week. It was 18 months a couple of weeks ago. It was 20
weeks
last week.
What we know is both...
April 8, 2016 is the latest date, isn't it?
What we know is both the Taoiseach and the Tánaiste have made very clear their commitment to serving to the last possible day. I think that is in the interests of the Irish people, because I think the stability that this government can bring and is bringing is important. And if you look at the economic improvements that are beginning to take hold, you know, we're now reviewing the end of a political year here, the end of a dull term. Remember, the Troika only left this country at the start of this year. You have a situation here where 61,000 jobs were created last year alone. Retail sales are up 7% in May of this year. People are beginning to see the improvement in this economy, and the job for Fine Gael and Labour now is to make people feel that in their pockets over the coming months.
And it's a huge job. Are we going to start getting logical, Micheál, do you think, when it comes to coalitions?
Yeah, perhaps. I think the point, though, about the government and kind of after the Troika left, it was extraordinary to witness how a government really seemed to be out of touch with some of the things, the big issues on the ground, the medical cards, and indeed the entire justice area at the time, and Alan Shatter causing the government so much bother for so long, that entire controversy. So they will have to demonstrate, you feel, if they are going to turn things around, an ability to deal with the domestic politics in a kind of a more political way. I mean, it was really typified during the local election campaign when Michael Noonan said, we are going to deal with the medical card issue, but after an election, which isn't probably the wisest political thing to do, even if it would have been a cynical move to do exactly what they did after the election before it. So I think you are going to see changes there, but judging by the polls, it will take a lot for Labour to get anywhere back where they were the last time, or even where they had been in the previous election going into that. So that a big task for the government that is ultimately probably going to point the way to a different type of coalition. For Fianna Fáil and Sinn Féin, could they possibly do business is the question, and there's a lot of resistance within Fianna Fáil privately to even that notion at the moment. But what's the alternative, ending the civil war for it, once and all?
It is something Sinn Féin is talking about, Pádraig, isn't it? Because your party president, Gerry Adams, made that point in the Red Cow at that gathering you had a couple of weeks ago.
Yeah, I mean, Sinn Féin, you know, obviously, like all serious political parties, want to be in government to implement our policies at some stage, but not at any cost. What I would like to see is a situation where either Sinn Féin on its own or a left bloc of Sinn Féin, Labour and some progressive left independents were the largest bloc. We need to have a situation for the first time that the centre or right parties of Fine Gael or Fianna Fáil are not the largest bloc in government. When that happens, I think we'll have a very different approach to governments than we've had historically.
You're not ready to stomach Fianna Fáil yet?
As I say, I strongly believe that Sinn Féin should not go into government unless the either Sinn Féin on our own or the left bloc that is in government is the largest bloc. We need to be larger than the centre-right party in order to have, you know, a new beginning to politics in Ireland.
You need to win over Joan, though, for that to happen. Joan Barton, she, I think, said during the week she wasn't interested.
Well, you know, the way that Joan Barton as a minister in this Labour Party in government has behaved to date could mean that Labour Party, you know, don't really have any options. You know, they're not even going to be players in a coalition, tragically. So they need to focus again on getting back to core Labour policies. If they do that, then we might be able to have a serious look at a strong left for the first time being stronger than the right going into government.
Well, we'd end up having a conversation about whether forced marriage was better than no marriage at all in that case. Doreen Byrne says gender quotas are rubbish if the women are appointed just because they are women. Another texter, a woman should be promoted on merit, not on gender. And Colm says, given the poor poll ratings for Fine Gael and the number of disappointed TDs left without a lifeboat after the reshuffle, could Lucinda Creighton and her Rebel Alliance ultimately be the big winners from this reshuffle? Now, coming up in just a moment, we'll be talking about the former Rehab chairman's demand for an apology from the Public Accounts Committee. You're listening to Saturday with Clare Byrne. A reminder of our panel, we have a new minister, junior minister at the Department of Finance, Simon Harris. Pádraig McLoughlin, Sinn Féin TD for Donegal North East, is in a studio in Derry today. Dr. Eoin O'Malley, lecturer in politics at DCU, is here with us in Dublin, as is Micheál Lehane from RTE's political staff. And we're going to move on now to Frank Flannery, the former chairman of Rehab. He appeared on Sean O'Rourke's programme yesterday after the committee, the Public Accounts Committee, was told that it wasn't allowed to compel either Mr. Flannery or Angela Kearns, the former CEO, to appear before it. Let's have a listen to Frank. He was speaking yesterday, as I said, to Sean, and talking about the legal advice which prevents PAC from calling him in.
I have a number of very strong concerns, and I don't particularly feel vindicated by this decision. I am relieved, but I feel pretty battered and pretty bruised. That's how I feel. The fact that the Rehab Group, an organisation I spent 33 years of my life in, when I joined it, we had 80 employees and we were a small organisation. When I left it, we have over 3,000 employees and a very large organisation, and very successful and providing services to tens of thousands of people. One of the best not-for-profit organisations of its kind in the world.
You made that point very well. But what about the question I asked you, though, Frank?
Let me say further. The damage to that organisation is the greatest agony in my life now. And that was done by an illegal enterprise by this committee. And that is one thing I hold very seriously against them. With regard to delightful Fine Gael organisation, with which I have also been involved for most of my life. You know the amount of sweat, blood and tears I put in with them.
Yes, I do.
And the fact that I am now outside that as well is another very serious damage done to me.
That was Frank Flannery. Simon Harris, you're a member of the Public Accounts Committee previously, before your appointment as minister. Do you think that the Public Accounts Committee should now apologise to Frank Flannery?
I'm going to be careful what to say because, as you say, I'm no longer a member of the Public Accounts Committee, but let me explain to you my view on this. The Public Accounts Committee is entitled to, as is any Oireachtas committee, to ask anybody it wishes to come before it. If that person or group decides they don't wish to come before it, the process is that you have to apply to this now famous CPP, a Committee of the Dáil, to ask for permission. That's what the Public Accounts Committee decided to do, because it decided, rightly in my view, that we needed to ask questions about how the nearly €3 billion of money is spent in a number of sectors and organisations, one of which is rehab, under what's called Section 38 and Section 39. So the Public Accounts Committee asked a question of the CPP, can we compel certain witnesses to come before it? The CPP has given its verdict, it's given its opinion, it's given its ruling rather, and I think that must be respected. So I think once the Public Accounts Committee respects that, I don't see the need to apologise. However, there's a broader question here, there's two broader questions. One, can we look at getting greater accountability without this adversarial system where we invite you in, you say no thanks very much, and next thing it becomes a personality kind of clash and rouse through the media? There's got to be a better way. There's an awful lot of public money being spent on disability organisations, and we know it's a tough time for people with disabilities throughout the last number of economic years. We've got to work out how we can hold groups that receive substantial money from the taxpayer to account. And that, and if that's through the PAC, fair enough, amend the rules. If it's not through the PAC, what other methods can be looked at? I think that's really, really important.
Can you just clear up this matter? He's saying that PAC never had any right or authority, given what we learned during the week from this legal advice, to examine rehab's accounts because it wasn't audited by the Comptroller and Auditor General. Is that correct, that PAC should never have gone near rehab?
My understanding from what I read, and you'll accept I'm no longer a member of the committee, my understanding from what I read is that that is the decision of the CPP, of that Dáil committee. However, the point is, these organisations are funded to a large part by various different government departments and state departments. So the question is, how does somebody scrutinise? If you give, and let's not make it just about rehab, because it's about many organisations, a couple of hundred. If you give money to an organisation, you can scrutinise the money until it gets to the door of that organisation. But how do you make sure, on behalf of people that I represent with disabilities, my constituents, how do I make sure that that money is then spent appropriately? How do I ask those questions? How do I probe it? Now, I fully respect the decision of the CPP. Absolutely fully respect it. But I think there's a broader need to look at the fact that we have a substantial sum of taxpayers' money, billions, being spent in organisations and agencies that now clearly, according to the CPP ruling, aren't covered by the Public Accounts Committee.
Okay, but you are holding these organisations to account, or trying to, using a politicised system. That's the big problem, isn't it? That's the sticky issue here, and the one that Frank Flannery, he made that point over and over again, saying John McGuinness, Fianna Fáil, chairman of PAC, only interested in winning headlines from attacking individuals.
Yeah, I think we need to be careful not to kind of degrade the fact that people are held to account in a political environment, because it's trying to hold people to account by the people's representatives, which I think is democratic. I think the fact that the Public Accounts Committee tends to operate in a bipartisan fashion is healthy. However, the risk, and this is where the negative part happens, is the risk in any political environment is that there can be a degree of grandstanding, there can be a degree of grabbing headlines.
And how do you avoid that?
And well, you avoid that, I suppose, by... Well, you've got to really trust the people who are carrying out the work. And I think we all have lessons to learn. I think every member of the Oireachtas has to learn lessons in relation to how we go about that. I had no interest during my time on the Public Accounts Committee in any one personality. I do have an interest, and still have an interest, and I particularly have an interest in my new role now, in terms of how taxpayers' money is spent. And I want to make sure that every cent of taxpayers' money is spent properly. There is brilliant work that goes on in many of these organisations, including rehab. But nobody is above questioning and probing. And maybe it's a need to have a discussion about what the new structures could be. Are the terms of reference for PAC adequate? Should there be another Oireachtas committee? Is there a way of doing this that isn't adversarial? We shouldn't need to try and drag people into the Public Accounts Committee. There has to be a mutual respect between both sides in terms of these issues.
Padraig McLaughlin, can I come to you on this? Because you could say that John McGuinness, Shane Ross and Mary Lou MacDonald earned countless headlines over the last year or so when it came to the examination of CRC and rehab and other organisations. And that's what they were in it for. That's what they were doing, carrying out this type of questioning of these individuals in the way that Frank Flannery describes. That was why they were doing it.
I think that the Public Accounts Committee, all of them, captured the imagination of the Irish people, the way that they carried out their business this year. They dealt with the issues of CRC and rehab, where people were getting paid way too much for what was, you know, to a large extent, public money being invested in. And it's, you know, it's clear that a number of them have had to resign since, so they didn't resign for nothing. So I chair the Public Service Oversight Committee in the Oireachtas, and I think that's, you know, all of us in the committees need to now demonstrate to the public that, you know, we are determined to hold people to account, that we will do so in a forensic fashion. I'm also mindful, Claire, that, you know, the people in a referendum refused to vote for the Oireachtas inquiries to allow Oireachtas committees to make findings of adverse fact, to compel witnesses, compel documentations, and that was their decision. But I feel that maybe after the Public Accounts Committee
sorry,
this year...
Just Pádraig, before you carry on, Simon, you want to clarify something there, do you?
No, I just want to make another point when Pádraig's finished. Sorry.
Okay, sorry, Pádraig, carry on.
Yeah, no, I just think that the Public Accounts Committee deserve credit for the way they went about their business, not just on this issue, but also on the issue of penalty points with the Garda Commissioner. They've done their work very forensically, and I think that what they've done is raise the bar for all the rest of the committees in the Oireachtas.
Do you think Frank Flannery is owed an apology?
No, I don't. I think Frank Flannery's decision to resign says it all.
Owen O'Malley.
Yeah, I'm just interested to hear the word forensic being used. I mean, one of the things I think you can't say about the way committees work is that it's forensic. It's a bit haphazard.
It's political?
Well, I'm with Simon here. I don't think political is a dirty word. I think it's right that at certain places politics gets involved, because it is political decisions as to where money goes and how it's spent, and it's right and proper.
The lines
that
are very blurred when you have somebody who's so deeply involved in Fine Gael as Frank Flannery was being pursued by somebody who's a chairman of a committee who's Fianna Fáil.
Yeah, but Ireland's a small country. It's always going to happen that people might see that. Simon is right. The people have a right to know how money has been spent. And committees have kind of moved from a place where they were producing worthy, dull reports to where headlines are coming. But the problem is the committees are under-resourced. Their remit and powers are under-specified. And those sorts of things need to be addressed. And then let the committee start doing its work.
Okay, very quick.
I think one point really worth making, Claire, is the fact that we now do have the new charity regulatory structures in place. So you're now going to have, for the first time, an organisation that is going to work with charities in terms of governance, regulation, and interacting with them. And that is non-political. And I think that's an extra layer that will be helpful to the sector.
Okay, we've got to leave that one there because we have plenty more to talk about. We're saying goodbye now to Owen O'Malley and to Micheál Lehane. We'll be welcoming more guests in just a moment to discuss Joe Burton, her low pay commission.